Welcome to The Crossroads, the dynamic intersection of life and sports, with your host, Coach TJ. Get ready for an electrifying edition where we explore the fascinating crossroads of life and sports right here on Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. Start the weekend with us Fridays at 6 p.m. Today's lineup is packed with barn burners that are sure to go viral. Hold tight as we plunge into the heart of the action. Are you ready to jump in? Let's make this ride unforgettable. Go, and on the count of three, go, 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 go,
go, and on the count of three, go, 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 go. What's going on? What's going on? We're about to dive into the heart of the action. You're at the crossroads where life and sports intersect. It is today, Friday the 19th, 2024. So, folks, if you're listening, you're on your evening commute, or you're just wrapping up, or you're catching this on replay, what's going on, family? What's going on? We stand here today at the corners of life and sports, once again at the crossroads, and I'm joined by my lead contributor, co-host, the incredible Mrs. Princess Cooper. What's going on? She's a princess, but she's definitely the queen. What's going on, Princess?
Oh, hey, Thomas, I like that. Lead contributor. I'm going to have to study more if I'm going to be a lead contributor.
Your knowledge of sports is, like, unbelievable. You're like, I need more prepper. How she know? So, folks, don't get twisted. Princess got a lot of sports knowledge. Oh, man, Princess, how was your week been?
You know, my week has been awesome. Again, just being productive. So how about yours? What did you do this week?
You know, it was a productive week. You know, it's always a productive week when you're preparing for, you know, this show, The Crossroads of Life and Sports Intersect. And once again, I always say, you know, by Wednesday, Thursday, just wait for it. Don't panic. There's going to be plenty enough for you to talk about. And lo and behold, you know, today – it all just, you know, comes together. And, you know, Princess, today's show, as I was putting it together, and we always talk about, you know, the intersections of life and sports, and this is more so geared towards the business side. You know, there's the fan side of sports, everything that a fan cares about. Then you got to look at the business side. So whether it's a pro football team or or your favorite college football team, or even the players now, you know, the business of the sport will always reign supreme when money is involved. So our first topic, I know, Princess, this is going to be near and dear to your heart as we're both Cowboys fans, and we're proud to say it. If anyone out there has anything to say about it, you could definitely add us a call in it, and we could definitely talk about why you don't like the Cowboys. So I got many reasons why you may not like them, but I got thousands of reasons why I do love my Cowboys since the 70s. You know, Princess, I want to get into, you know, talking about Jerry Jones. And with the upcoming draft coming up, and I want to have that conversation, does Jerry really value Dak Prescott? And does some of the parameters that the NFL puts on the back of quarterbacks, you know, with the salary? I know these salaries are fair market value, but because of the salary cap restraints and all your players after the quarterback are slotted to gain certain income, are the quarterbacks pushing themselves out of the market? Because it's just cheaper to get a up-and-comer in the draft instead of paying, you know, $50 million a year to a Dak, and based on the market, he deserves it, but I may not want to pay it. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the market demands what the salaries are, and right. I don't think it's just Dak Prescott or the value of quarterbacks. You know, you sit down at the table, the agents sit down with the table with the ownership and with the GM, and they try to negotiate this thing, but they're getting higher and higher, and I don't know if that has to do with anything that the quarterback has really done on the field. You know, the best thing that a winning quarterback can do is continue to get better, to continue to have 10, 12, 14 win seasons and stay out of trouble off the field. Those are the things. And then you make yourself brandable. You make yourself the face of the franchise for sure. So I don't know if the quarterbacks are doing anything. When I heard that Joe Burrow, you know, had a $55 million contract, I question that, you know, but he's riding high. He came out of LSU with a national championship.
Right.
He gets to Cincinnati, and in year two, or maybe it was year one, he gets all the way to the Super Bowl. Now he's been, I think it's year two because he was hurt year one. The biggest drawback with him is that, you know, the injuries for sure that has kept him out again this past season. But the demand is there because the demand is for the NFL, and I think it's the top sport right now. It is in my life. Now, I love college football, but I also love the NFL, and it has the best year ever. And when I say the best year ever, as soon as you finish, you know, the Super Bowl, it's still, you know, relevant. It's the combine, and it's the draft, and then it's time for OTAs,
right.
And then it's time for preseason games and then regular season games. So, I don't know if any of these young men in the top 10 as far as high-stake quarterbacks have anything to do with the demand. The position requires it. It's no other position. And as soon as you are that position in the NFL, you are the face of the franchise, and the money continues to go up because TV deals continue to go up. And here we are with this amount of money.
Now, when it comes to the Cowboys, I was seeing reports that Michael Penix was in town along with Spencer Rattler. And I think Michael Penix will probably be a second rounder. And Spencer Rattler, who had a great season at South Carolina this year, will probably fall in the late third, early fourth, like Dak Prescott did. So if you're looking at it, you know, from a Jerry point of view, you know, I'm not sure if I can win with Dak. How do you think he's looking at it? If that's really the question of what Jerry values right now.
Yeah, you know, there's been so much out there about Dak Prescott and his value and what Jerry Jones thinks about it. It was hard for him to release Tony Romo and said, hey, Dak is is our quarterback. Tony Romo penned a letter to his fans and bows out gracefully. But here we are, and I think this past week Jerry Jones finally said, you know, Dak is my quarterback. But is Dak your quarterback if you draft a quarterback in this draft? You know,
right.
But I've heard also the argument that they have to prepare for next. And I think next year Dak Prescott's salary balloons to $55 million. Literally – you have to say then, is he worth that $55 million? I don't know if Jerry Jones has ever stood over in the corner of Dak Prescott and showed his confidence or his commitment or his loyalty. And saying he's my quarterback doesn't really say much to me. But truth be told, Thomas, I have my issues with Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys myself. I thought they were close this year. I thought they had an opportunity, especially
right.
to open up at home in the playoffs against Green Bay. I was surprised that this is how we ended the season. So I'm still mad at Dak Prescott. I'm still mad at the entire team. He just happens to be the leader. But I thought they looked awful. But again, they're close. If they can get him some pieces, I think he's worth his weight in gold because he can throw the ball. He can make good decisions. I just think he needs to make those good decisions on into the playoffs and get him over that first round and then maybe get him into, you know, the next weekend. But I don't know what Jerry Jones has ever done to really show his commitment like he did to Tony Romo. He was all in, and like a son to me. He's like a son to me. I don't know if Dak will ever have that. Tell us.
Well, you mentioned pieces, and this wasn't on our subject line, but, you know, it pops up when we talk about the business of the sport, you know, what's going on with CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons. I'm hearing that CeeDee Lamb is very unhappy. You know, he wants to be paid, you know, top receiver value money, and he's planning not to show up unless he has to show up, you know, which is a problem for off-season development and camaraderie. And I'm hearing reports, and I'm always amazed when these secret reports coming out, and there's been several about Micah Parsons, and there are people in the organizations that would love, in the organization would love Micah, you know, to be traded. So I'm like, well, what's going on here? What is your thoughts on those two pieces, important pieces for the Cowboys?
I'm sorry, Thomas. I was distracted for a moment. My apologies. Ask that question again, sir. My sincere apologies.
No problem. I would just say, you know, there's these sources coming out. I'm always amazed when you hear these anonymous sources are reporting to mainstream media about what the inner workings, but they don't want to put their name on it, that, you know, Micah Parsons, you know, the organization, some people in the organization would be happy if the Cowboys move on from Micah Parsons, and that CeeDee Lamb is not happy with his current situation. He's planning possibly not to show up unless there's mandatory camp. Or, you know, for OTAs, he's not.
Thomas,
what are your thoughts on that?
I say over and over that the window of opportunity for getting all of these guys in the same place at the same time with great talent and commitment to each other and commitment to winning is very short and very small.
Right.
Micah Parsons is now this is year three, maybe year four. CeeDee Lamb has been there now 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe this is year one. I think this is 2 years. Dak Prescott, we know how long he's been there. But they were prime and ready for this year, even after allowing Ezekiel Elliott to move on to free agency and be picked up by the Patriots. So I'm not surprised at the chirping. I'm not surprised that here we are, we're ready to move on, because that's what happens. We're not in that season, and when I say that season, we're not in that culture where everything we wait for it and rookies take their turn. We're in that season where it's microwavable. Everybody wants success now, and if they're not realizing it, they're willing to move on and try something else, and that's exactly where we are. I don't know if you can keep them all happy because they can see happy somewhere else. They can see the greener pasture. And it's kind of tough to keep them all aligned within the stars of working together, having success together, and shooting for a Super Bowl. And I remember hearing some of Micah Parsons, you know, tweets or reading some of his tweets and, you know, maybe it's time to move on or some things and wanting to maybe possibly go to the Eagles. I saw something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think I
–
you know.
And now the Redskins could be in a mix with possible trades.
Exactly, of course, because he seems to have flourished and seems to really connect with Dan Quinn, who's now the head coach over there and was the defensive coordinator. We're going to see some of these movement. That's why I say the window gets very small. And if you win a Super Bowl and get to the Super Bowl, it's hard to keep that team intact or your coaching staff intact the next season. Just ask the Eagles how that worked out, losing both their coordinators and getting back to a certain point but not even able to get over the hump. They look pedestrian compared to their run last year. So I'm not surprised at this. Does it bother me? Am I concerned as a Dallas Cowboys fan? Of course.
Right.
That's why I had a sense of urgency, maybe some desperation in wanting them to really get there this year. When I say get there, at least get to the NFC championship game. And they didn't. They couldn't even get out of the first weekend. So here we are. And that's the trouble with professional sports. We have this loyalty. I've been a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan since the 70s also. I can remember Hollywood Henderson and Preston Pearson and Roger Staubach and all of those as they continue. But these guys come and go, and we have to kind of, manage our emotions as they come and go because they're not there like we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Hollywood Henderson, that's a name. That's a name from the past right there. That's a Cowboys fan you are.
It's
sickening because Jerry, he has a way of pulling us in. When he said that he was all in, I'm all in. All in to me means I'm all in. I'm going to do whatever. So when Derrick Henry was out there,
I thought that would be a great pickup for the Cowboys because they were lacking a running game. But instead, they signed a six-year player that's been on, four different teams. And nothing against Royce Freeman, but that's not the impact I thought Jerry Jones was going to have with this year's Cowboys. I thought he was going to do a lot more. You have Joe Mixon that went to the Texans. It looks like the Texans are the best team in the state of Texas. For instance, I don't know. You know, I'm not even hyping myself up this year because I know I'm going to be let down.
Yeah, you know, Derrick Henry, they said his request was too expensive, or what they wanted, they didn't want to pay. So I agree. Here we are with the running back that's been on four different teams, and we're announcing him like he's going to come in and make an impact and be an Ezekiel Elliott, or you know, or even those that have come before him, and we can go Emmitt Smith, Tony Dorsett, or even as recent as DeMarco Murray, if I got it.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, DeMarco Murray now is coaching college football. I think he's the running back coach for Oklahoma. If I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So I thought they should have gotten Derrick Henry too. I thought that would be a key piece on offense and would have given them a key.
Joe Mixon.
Yeah, and I hear you on Joe Mixon, and Joe Mixon came from Oklahoma. It's not too
correct.
Keen on him. But I'm still carrying, you know, the stuff of what happened between he and his girlfriend on campus. So I got to release
my pettiness. Yeah.
So
that's major. That's major.
That was major. And I applaud, gosh, and I can't remember, the coach was at Oklahoma at the time, and I can see his face right now.
Was it Stoops?
Yeah. Okay. So Bob Stoops. I applaud Stoops for protecting him as a young man during that time because that was a poor decision. But eventually, the media and the reporters would not leave it alone, and so they petitioned to get those records open up, and they did. But that's horrific. I hope they both have come through that. And Joe Mixon has proven that he is a NFL running back.
Yes, he has.
So you know what? The Texans look better to me on paper and as far as making moves than the Dallas Cowboys do. Look much better. So
yeah.
Here we are.
And look how
I don't think the Cowboys made enough moves. Look how they went
from a laughing stock. They couldn't, you know, nail down a coach. They had, you know, the controversy with Deshaun Watson. You know, so if you go back 5 years, and what they've been able to do over, you know, from last season, now coming into this season, it's like a tale of two cities. You're like, wow, is this the same organization? So if you're a Houston Texans fan, you know, the future looks bright. If those two teams scrimmage, as a Cowboys fan, I think Houston on paper is going to win. Unless, you know, Jerry Jones has a stellar draft. That this means it puts so much pressure on this year's draft, where the Cowboys and Jerry Jones cannot miss. They're going to have to hit in every round. There's no project can come out of this draft.
Kevin put in the thread, our sports thread on Facebook, that the Texans are the best NFL team in the state of Texas. So I purposely did not respond to that because I was offended. But as I thought about it, wow.
Shout out to Kevin Walker.
He may be right. And I hope he isn't listening because I hate when he is right about, you know, that. But you got to give D'Amico Ryan's credit. You got to give him credit. And you got to give the Texans credit for finally – stopping that revolving door at head coach, finding somebody
right.
that was willing to come in there that they believed in and that they let stay there more than a year. So with that being said, and then he takes them and gets them through the first round, the first weekend of the NFL playoffs. C.J. Stroud is a monster. So now let's go get pieces around him that will help him. Let's get him some protection. And then, of course, you know, Coach Ryan's baby is the defense, and they're already on point. So
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So I give them credit, and I give the Cowboys, and I've seen this happen probably the last 3 or 4 years. I've seen the Eagles make better moves in our division than the Cowboys. I've seen the Cowboys really stay kind of stagnant when it comes to free agency and acquiring better talent the last 3 or 4 years. But yet, they were at the brink this past year. Won the division again, but could not do anything with it.
Yeah, and before we close this segment out, I just wanted to give a shout-out to the Texans. You know, it doesn't get mentioned enough that the Texans are committed to diversity at the head coaching level because they had Lovie Smith that didn't work out, then David Culley, and then D'Amico Ryans. So that's a team that even though they had a lot of other stuff going on, they were committed to diversity and finding the best candidate. And they finally did, you know, on a third try, you know. So I love that about that organization. If you look at that organization, those position coaches and assistant coaches, they are committed to getting the best candidates and along with diversity at the same time. So shout out to the Texans for going above and beyond with that. So that takes us into our first break. When we come back from break, now we're going to definitely dive into business side of sports and a little controversy. You know I love controversy here at the Crossroads where life and sports intersect. We'll be right back.
At Vintage Labs Collection, we are a multifaceted team of medical professionals dedicated to delivering the best quality products to patients. Our mission is to deliver the best supplement and patient outcomes in healthcare environments and consumer homes. Chat with our consulting pharmacists by visiting our website at www.vintagelabscollection.com. Supplements are not highly regulated, but Vintage Labs holds the standards higher than most.
CampLyman.com is an opportunity for my big boys to come get some work. Let's put it all together. We build from the ground up. You know, our cliche is it all starts up front. Once again, start, stance, hand placement, hand separation, get-offs, counter moves, a little bit of everything. Polish up those skills before your middle school or high school season began. Just come work on your craft. Once again, CampLyman.com.
What's going on, family? We're back at the Crossroads where life and sports intersect. Princess, for this next segment, it seems like every major sport has been hit with some type of gambling scandal, whether it's the NCAA, you know, you had, you know, your players at Iowa State and a few other schools, but Iowa State just jumps out to me right now. You had a few players last year being suspended from the Redskins and the Atlanta Falcons. You had Shohei Ohtani this year with his betting scandal, and now you have the NBA with Jonte Porter, the younger brother of Michael Porter Jr. And what's sad about this situation, Michael Porter Jr. is preparing for upcoming first round games against the LA Lakers. So he's being asked about his brother's, you know, involvement, you know, with this betting scandal. So it's not alleged. You know, they have the proof that he was working with a known professional gambler. So with everything that's going on, with these partnerships that all the leagues, whether it's NCAA, whether it's the NFL, whether it's Major League Baseball, basketball, can they really police these players from not making bets? It just seems hypocritical, and everybody is making money. And I've talked about this a long time ago, that it was more than Tim Donaghy that was on the take within, you know, with the NBA referees, with that scandal. There was a lot of people involved. I don't know if you can keep everyone from gambling, because gambling is second nature in the United States. What are your thoughts on that as we go through this topic?
I understand that gambling is at an all-time high. And, you know, even when we decide to play these little games on ESPN and CBS Sports, you know, taking the over-under, but, you know, it's just something to do to see if you really you test your knowledge. But then, you know, you start looking at DraftKings and all of these other things now, even ESPN Bet, and you start thinking, I can do that. I know enough. But to say that you understand the rules, you know, and, right. and they have to police this. There has to be some integrity in the game. And to see him remove himself from two games and to see that needle move with how many people are betting on those two games and
right.
to have that betting that betting entity to report it, come on, Jonte.
That was the obvious. Like, you could have just played the game and just sucked. You took
exactly.
yourself out with $80,000
exactly.
betted on you. My God, Lee Don, come on, man.
Exactly. He wasn't even smart about, you know, making this look like it could have been coincidental at all. And it wasn't his first time, you know, and he's in the G League betting on games. So he made poor decisions and dumb decisions, and now he is banned for life. So what does he do? What does he do? He won't get the opportunity to ever be an analyst about basketball, not on the college level or the NBA. You know, exactly. So go overseas and play.
You know,
go overseas and play and get some money. As a matter of fact, get comparable money in China that you do in the U.S. But your time here is done. You're going to have to develop if that's what you're going to do, you're then going to have to get used to a whole new culture. All you had to do, here you got your brother and you playing in the NBA, and that's not good enough.
You know, Princess, I honestly think it's a mental illness, because he's not the only one that's ever been caught up into scandals. There's been scandals going on when it comes to betting, the mob, and everything since, you know, I can remember in the 70s. And as a fan, we look at it and say, well, all they had to do, they're making all this money. They got all this, you know, access. Why are they putting it on the line? And time after time, you know, I look at them like, hey, there's some type of mental problem, because only someone with a problem would jeopardize all that they worked so hard for. Even if you are in a two-way player, NBA G League type player, you still have gotten to the top of your profession. You are still in the top 3% of basketball players that play ball in the United States. Top three, top two, you know, 0-1%. You're up in the upper echelons, and you got to work mighty hard to get there. You know what I mean? So it has to be more than, you know, thrill seeking. And I know more, or I can't be caught, because when you do crime, you always get caught. I can't name a person, you know, that I know from my home city that's done crime that thought they were smart that did not get caught. Your time always comes. So I don't know what it is. It keeps happening. And it's not the NFL's part, because the part of the reason they get these salaries, because they do got DraftKings and all these betting houses, you know, it adds to the pool, which elevates the salaries. So, you know, you can't have one without the other, but and maybe it should be some type of, you know, a mental evaluation that goes on when you're pulling people into these leagues.
I agree, Thomas. It's just, it's got to be a mental illness. It's got to be something that you really just can't stay away from. But to bet on your career like that,
right.
He was going to get caught. It was a dangerous game from the beginning, and I hope, and that is that those that are doing it right now, even just haphazardly, and you're playing in your, you know, in your profession, stop betting on it.
Right. Take the example, you know, of Pete Rose. You know, Pete Rose wasn't betting. He wasn't betting on his games, but the fact that you are betting, and you know the concept, you know the consequences. So you know, Porter claims that he wasn't betting on his games, but you still are making moves so other people can make money. You can't be trusted in no locker room in the NBA no more. So I hope that he gets the psychological help that he needs, and somehow he finds his way back with the NBA as an ambassador, where he speaks at these rookie symposiums and to tell these kids, like, hey, take it from me, you're not smarter than the investigation unit inside of, you know, the NBA. But all these leagues have, you know, CIA, FBI, and other intelligence agencies that work privately for them to make sure they know what's going on first. You know, so I don't think they realize, you know, that part of the game, that investigative unit that's there, that sees and knows everything. They got mob connections. They know people at the hotels. You know, they know people at the police department. So they're going to get the information first that you're doing something, because they have to be on top of it.
Agreed. Again, though, the betting entity said, hey, there's uncharacteristic activity going on for these two, and uncharacteristic betting on this one player and the over and under. And they reported it, you know, to the NBA. He should have been smarter than that, and he should have known that there were smarter
Did we lose her?
Yeah.
Princess, we lost you for a second. Okay, folks, it seems like we're having some technical difficulties. Let me check with our producer
to
see what's going on here.
Work?
Yes, I got you perfect. I was just checking with the guys in the studios to make sure everything was working there.
Perfect. I was just saying that, you know, the mechanisms out there to report this and to investigate was much better than he was ever going to be. And I like your thoughts about it, the connections to the mob and those that are being used, and the fact that they go FBI, CIA. He was not going to get away with this. And I hurt for him. But this too will last about 2 weeks, and then maybe he can try to put his life together and decide what he's going to do.
Yeah, I would be so embarrassed, you know, to tell my mom. I can hear her now. If I really effed up like that, oh man, I don't know, folks. If you come from a black household and you gotta go home and tell your parents something, or any household, and you know, it's not going to be good. The level of disappointment that he's brought to the Porter family, it's unbelievable, and it's public. You know, it's every publication. You know, every blogger is talking about it. You know, we're talking about it because, you know, it's so important. You know, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while, and I hope, you know, he's in a strong mental frame of mind that he doesn't do anything to himself, because that is a big loss. So I hope he's able to man up about it and take the consequences, you know, like I say, you know, stand tall like a man. You did it. You did the crime, do the time, and whatever that is, face it head on and learn from it, because you can still pivot to something else. Life is not over. Life is just over with the NBA. You just can't play ball. But there's other things that you can do with your life. So, you know, I just don't like to talk when I hear people talking, oh, he's throwing his life away. No, he hasn't. He still has about, like, possibly, you know,
I haven't talked to the good Lord about it, but he could possibly have 60 years, 70 years to go. He can live till he's 92. He didn't throw it all away. This is just a chapter in his life that's coming to a close, and maybe another door opens.
Yeah, he made about $2.3 million so far. He hasn't been in the league that long. And
right.
I don't know if that's career earnings or if that is, per year. But that's nothing to sneeze at. I also think, though, when you are around, an industry where $2.3 million isn't king and $16 million a year is, maybe it encourages you or forces you to want more, to do more, so you can run with the big dogs. But that isn't
especially
the way
you
right
see
there.
Especially you see your brother and what he's doing. So I don't you say you
That's
don't know
right.
the family dynamics, with that. So it could be a lot that plays into that. You're probably saying to yourself, "Hey, I do this a couple times, and then I get out. I'm just going to come up.
There you go.
And then I stop. But once they got you roped in and got their hooks into you. There is no stop.
There is no quick out, for sure.
That's the hard part. And I think, if a lot of people like the Calvin Ridley's, like the Ohtani's, and other people can really speak to the youth and tell them, don't do it. The one thing we know you can do, you can go play the Mega Millions, or you can play a scratch off. If you want to gamble and pour money down the drain, play the lottery. Play the lottery, but don't bet on sports. Period. Don't bet on sports. I don't care if it's the NCAA pool. You can't do it. Don't do it, folks. And folks, that's going to take us into our next commercial break, and we'll be right back at the crossroads where life and sports intersect.
When I was in the NFL, I would use towels similar to dry towel, but they were made out of cotton, so they weren't as effective. So what happens is you have to change the towel probably two or three times a game. The absorption rate is greater than any cotton towel you'll ever see on the market. What I love about the dry towel is that it absorbs sweat and moisture so well that you don't really have to change it throughout the course of a game, not three or four like I used to use on the course of a game to keep everything dry and intact. Also, for you guys who wear mouthpieces, little pocket for your mouthpiece so you don't have to stick it in your helmet. You don't have to keep track of it. In the course of a game, your hands are going to get dirty. You're going to get dirty. You don't want to put your mouthpiece in your hands a whole lot, so it's a nice little pocket. After the play, you put it there. Right before you walk up to the line of scrimmage, you grab it back. Bam, it's right there. I used to like to wipe my hands off so I wouldn't fumble the football, to make sure my grip was straight. This would have been perfect. Everything is sealed. Everything is right here on my right-hand side. Easily accessible, I can grab it, pop it in, I'm done.
Hey, what's going on, family? What's going on? We're back at the crossroads where life and sports intersect. This segment, Princess, I want to get into the business of college football. And I want to highlight, Coach Prime, Coach Deion Sanders, and you know how I feel about Coach Deion Sanders and what he's doing at Colorado. But what's happening, not just at Colorado, and I just want to make that clear, but Coach Sanders gets highlighted more than other schools. Right now, there's over 2,100 players. That's the number I pulled from ESPN between FCS and FBS that are currently in the transfer portal. So that means for folks that are out there, a lot of backups. And it could be a multiple reasons why someone would enter the transfer portal. Hey, I don't like the way I'm being coached. I'm homesick. Hey, I miss my girlfriend. I want to be closer. Hey, I just don't like the way I'm being coached. You're not maximizing my potential. So people enter the transfer portal. Maybe someone's sick.
and then when we were closer to home. But these kids are 17, 18, 19, 20, and I remember as a person of that age, you know, many moons ago now, it seemed like it was yesterday, I was super indecisive. You know, so I don't know if I could hold true to a commitment of anything if I had the opportunity to get out because I didn't like the situation, not knowing that the situation I'm in could be the best for me and they have the best intentions taking care of me and developing me into a man or a woman, because this is happening also in women's sports too. The transfer portal is just not about football and basketball. It's about all sports, but they just don't get the coverage. You know, even the bowling team has transfers. They just don't have the money there, but those kids transfer too based upon, you know, the situation. But, you know, as Deion Sanders is preparing for spring game, the Black and Gold weekend is going on right now. Yesterday was a talent show. This week is a concert and ball. Tomorrow's the game and after parties. There'll be some artists in town. There's about 25 new players and potential recruits from the 2025 class that's there this weekend. So it's going to be a big thing. And it's being broadcasted live on the Pac-12 channel. That's a whole nother conversation, you know, with that game being broadcast on the Pac-12 channel. And that conference breaks up at the end of August. There no more. So that one is funny to me, but they hold the rights to the game. But Princess, just looking back at some of the news you've been hearing about the transfer portal, and I just will give another example. I looked at University of Texas. You know, Colorado has lost 15. Texas has lost 22. Houston has lost 25. Louisville has a mass exodus going on. I don't know what's going on at University of Louisville. So it seems like these student athletes are taking control, and some of these coaches are pushing people out. Can you weigh in on that, Princess?
Yeah, I think where we are in 2024 with college football, you're going to continue to see that. And that is that I think last year, you know, University of Florida had a high amount of transfer portal. You're going to see that. I don't know if you saw a lot, but Alabama had a lot and some commitments,
right,
you know, backed out and all of that. I think, though, we pay attention to Coach Deion Sanders because he is Coach Prime and because he is who he is. And I'm so rooting for him. But you're going to get those parents and some of the players who are going to recap their experience or discuss, you know, hey, this is what they were doing and this is what they said, and I think my son is better than that. We had some Florida
Correct.
High school coaches over last night, and they said they never met a parent who didn't think their son was headed to the NFL or that they were not the best thing ever. And that's exactly what we have. And that particular running back, you know, the staff didn't think he was running back one, you know, and the parent did. And so he wants to move on. He said, thank you for the hospitality. See you later. You know, and that's, you know what, I thought that was pretty good considering what they could have said, because they could have gone into other conversations that they had. They didn't. I applaud what McLean's mom said, you know, but McLean's
right.
mom also knew that her son was not at his best at Colorado. He was still going off of his notoriety and his popularity at his high school. But when you get to the next level, you're going to have to acclimate better than that and do the bare minimum. Go to class, you know, respond back to texts, be to meetings on time, and sit in the front, act like you want to be there, represent, you know, the team well. And he didn't do the bare minimum, but I'm glad that her statement was the bare minimum. You know, leave the rest alone. At this point, you've decided to move on. Don't create additional drama. But I do say this. If anybody can handle it, I think it's Coach Prime. He'll be okay. He'll handle it. And he is, I think he's one of the best judge of talents out there when it comes to football, and he'll field a team that'll be much better than last year.
Absolutely. For Princess, you know, it brings me to another topic, and this is not being talked about. You know, after COVID and the things that we know now about the way that kids learn, and just watching Kamani and hearing some interviews and different things since he's been popped up on the national scene. I've been watching him since he was at Lakeland and seeing him on social media. I'm wondering, does Kamani have a diagnosis with ADHD or ADHD or some type of, you know, disability where it may be an issue where he cannot watch film for a long period of time, or he's not grasping, you know, the information, and that, you know, his coaches in high school and teachers kind of pass him along because of the talent that he possesses. And that happens a lot. And then when these kids get to college and they see the business side exists, and if you're not picking up the information, no matter what stars besides your name, we're going to have to move on from you, son. So I wonder if they're, you know, are they assessing these kids to make sure that's, because sometimes the program maybe not for you. Is there some type of assessment that's going on? I'm really going to dig into that, you know, soon to see. And I know the support stuff is there, but a lot of times it's definitely going to be there. But if the kid's not used to getting it for himself, you can't expect him to go get it. So maybe he needs to be at an environment where, I'm not saying coddle him, but work with him more. He looks like he needs to be in a bubble to be successful.
Well,
and I know a lot of kids are like that.
I think whatever it is, he brought those same standards he had in high school and brought those same habits to college football. I don't think
Absolutely.
He's pivoted at all. And I want to say this.
Do you think he knows how to pivot at this point in his life?
I think he has the ability, but you just brought up a good point. Maybe he does not know how. But again, stardom, notoriety brings about a certain level of arrogance. And if you've been given a pass in high school on several things, hey, you know the game plan. You don't have to come in and watch film if you don't want to. Maybe he was given a pass. Maybe he was given a pass on going to class, you know. You just never know. It would be good to investigate and see. But I hope he turns the corner from that, because if he thinks this is something, wait until real life hits him. So there's got to be a point where we do better. And I don't want to continue to give this generation that pass. Okay, let's go ahead and get some consultations and see where we are. Test him mentally and physically. But I also think his habits, his bad habits followed him, and he didn't make a change.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at the man in the mirror and make a change. You know, I hear Michael Jackson's voice singing in my head. I can't sing like Michael, so I'm not even going to do it, Princess. Not even going to do it to you folks. You definitely, you know, won't tune in. And we're not making light on it, but it's just sad. And Kamani is not the only athlete in this position. It's the one that we're hearing about the most. Princess, you know how exciting college women's basketball has been, you know, this season, which has, to me, has been the best season I ever seen in women's college basketball. But right now, men's college basketball is dominating the headlines. So I wanted to get into, you know, what's going on in Kentucky and Arkansas, and, you know, what the Walton family that owns Walmart, and if you didn't know, with John Tyson, the CEO of Tyson Chicken. And it just was reported, and it was confirmed, because I didn't believe when I saw it, that Jerry Jones basically said, hold my beer. Whatever another school gives, I will double. And he stated it like three times on three different platforms. So I'm like, whoa, Arkansas has more money than anyone. And that's not the only, you know, famous alumnus that's, you know, going all in on Arkansas sports, because they already have bought their best baseball team. Coach Pittman for the football team, he's on a hot seat because they're about to get someone in there if he doesn't do the job this year. And now John Calipari, you know, just got his top assistant, Kenny Payne from Louisville. And he's making $900,000 as assistant head coach. So, you know, and I look at Mark Pope, what can't we know who they hired quickly after Calipari, and I'm looking like that hire is kind of underwhelming. And I saw his press conference. It kind of reminded me of Nick Sirianni when he came in. And I was kind of like, what? What are you talking about? So it looks like Kentucky is they're scrambling to get people in there. So I don't know if Mark Pope is ready for the job, you know, coming from Utah Valley, then to BYU, and now to Kentucky. You're telling me he's ready? Did you talk to Shaka Smart about the position? I mean, did you talk to Sean Miller that used to be at Arizona? I mean, to replace a Calipari, you need someone like a Calipari or better. Did you talk to Bruce Pearl? You know, Calvin Sampson? Did you have these conversations? I don't know. I don't know, Princess, with the situation. But it looks like Arkansas is going to win out on this deal.
You know what? I think that Arkansas is going to win out on this deal, because not only do they have a Hall of Fame coach, but they also have the backing of the Tyson Foods president, owner, and then, of course, Jerry Jones, who is a University of Arkansas graduate.
Don't forget about Walmart. Don't forget about the Waltons.
Who was Jerry Jones' roommate at Arkansas? Was it?
Jimmy Johnson.
So you'll now start to see that attention on Arkansas basketball. The Arkansas coach that was there went to USC, and the USC coach went to SMU. So here we are. But again, I still say this, and out of all of those 15 years, there was excitement every year. There was fanfare every year. And a lot of those years were 28, 29, 31 wins, 32 wins, 33 wins. But Kentucky fans got tired of not winning the national championship. They wanted more, you know, out of all of this. So now I think Calipari pivots. He takes that same formula to Arkansas. I think he'll fine-tune it a little bit. And I say he wins the national championship with Arkansas in 2 to 3 years. But
whoa, wait a minute. We had this conversation about him at Kentucky, and you said, hold on, I wish I could play it back. You said he would. I said he would win a championship, and you said he would not.
So if I said that, I stand corrected that maybe I have changed my mind, because I think he'll get the backing.
You are allowed to do that.
I really think, though, that out of all of this time, Calipari is a good judge of talent, and he can accumulate it. But let's just be honest. The numbers are numbers. He went on the national championships, and the past 4 or 5 years, he couldn't even get out of the first round. So let's see what he can do.
Well, you know what happened, too? After that 2019 run, I think they got to the final eight. Kenny Payne got the job at Louisville. And then, you know, you count in those two COVID years. And, you know, when you count in that 20 team could have been destined to win. The season got cut short, and they ended the season. And then 21, it seemed like no one cared. and then 22, you know, with the St. Peter's loss, and then that brings us to 23 with the Oakland loss. So I think people forget, fans forget about what happened in 20 and 21. They kind of lump it all together, like, hey, he didn't do this since 2019. But there was some stoppages there that you don't know what could have happened, and nobody was trying to do nothing in 20 because people were still scared to be around people in 21, and no one wanted to be. They kind of forced that season. That should have been a season they should they shouldn't have came back. But everybody, they were trying to get things to come back online. I think they, you know, because people were losing money, and so it wasn't about the best. It wasn't. They were not thinking about what's best for the student athlete at the time, and those student athletes underperformed like they should have, but they shouldn't have been there. So I think people need to take that into consideration. But I think you're 100% right that, you know, he gets new life, almost like when Andy Reid got fired from the Eagles and he immediately took that job at Kansas City, and just it was like it never happened. Andy Reid just went on and boom. I think, you know, I think you're right, Princess. The same thing's going to happen here around these new people.
We have to say now, considering how he came into Kentucky, and he had 35 first rounders into the NBA. 35. He underperformed at Kentucky with winning national championships. And those big Blue Nation fans, they don't care about those young men going on to the NBA and changing the trajectory of their lives and their kids' lives and maybe their parents before them. They change their whole financial situation, their life and the life after them. Those fans could care less about them. They want to win. They want to be in the Sweet 16, Final Four,
and
the national championship.
We'll
and
see,
Calipari didn't
we'll
do that.
See, right, we'll see how much they win now. We'll see what five-star comes through the door now. So sometimes be careful. The grass is not always greener. And it was. People need to remember Billy Gillespie. People need to remember what Kentucky was like under Eddie Sutton, you know, when he was they were put on probation before Rick Pitino came. There were some dry years when Kentucky wasn't doing nothing, you know, when I was a kid, you know, coming up in the 80s and the early 80s into late 80s, about 91, 92, it started to come on. I remember I was disappointed when that Jamal Mashburn team got beat by Duke on that shot, which I still can't believe to this day. That was 91. And then they won the title in 90 and 96. They won in 90. The Pitino won a title and Tubby Smith won a title. Am I correct on that?
I think Pitino did. But Thomas, if Kentucky does not win but one national championship in the next 15 years, they've matched Calipari.
The SEC, the money in the SEC from top to bottom now, I don't know they have that cachet. And I think they're going to have to, and I said this before, what makes you a blue blood program is going to have to be updated. I don't, because everyone has facilities. Everyone has money. Everyone has cachet now, and with the transfer portal, it means nothing. It means nothing. So I think Arkansas, like you said, is going to win, and they're going to win quick. And Calipari is going to assemble, you know, a balanced squad of his one and dones and kids that have more toughness because they maybe were not the NBA player that will move on that first and second year. But they're developing into something and want to be coached by him, you know, for their third and fourth and grad year. And I think that's the mix that, you know, he needs going forward. I think he has the money to go get it.
Exactly.
He has the money
to
go get it now.
The support that Calipari is going to get and him now going to a, you know, a different school. But now also remember, Calipari wanted he went back to Kentucky and said, hey, can you match this? He did do that.
Right. I want to keep you. I want to give you one shot to keep me.
hey, do you blame him? Because, you know, that I think that was a ploy, because he had, because in his contract he had to let him know, hey, my agent's been having these conversations behind closed doors. This is what's on the table. I would like to stay if you want me to stay, but you're going to need to match this. No, you're crazy.
Thomas,
okay.
Thomas, you know now. You know now. Calipari heard the chirping. He heard all of the media talking. He was not oblivious to the local media eating him up. ESPN.
Yeah, and that press conference, you remember that press conference? He looked like the walking dead in that press conference.
He looked like the walking dead coming off of that court. My heart went out to him.
But at least he didn't say what Bill Self said, you know, he couldn't wait for the season to be over.
They had a lot of injuries at Kansas. I can give him a pass on that one. Man, they were decimated.
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't sound good if you just hear that part. But they were really decimated.
Well, all right. Well, I will definitely take your word on that. I'm not a Bill Self fan or a Kansas Jayhawk fan, but. Once again, Princess, this has been the fastest hour in radio at the crossroads where life and sports intersect. It always goes by fast, Princess. You look up, and we're 45 minutes into it because the conversations are so great, and you don't realize how fast time is going. If you want to say anything before we get on out of here?
No, Thomas, have a great weekend. I'm excited about broadcasting on Sunday. I talked about it. But have a great weekend. I need to get with you about the Never Had It So Good Sports Radio NFL mock draft that we're having on Monday. So I'll call you in the morning so that we can kind of get our ducks in a row and let you know what your picks are and see if you're available, okay?
Well, absolutely. And, folks, you know, next Friday night, you know, the show will be going at between 6 to 7. I believe the draft will start at 7. So I will give a recap on round one and what I think what's going to happen in round two, especially for all my Cowboy listeners out there. We're going to keep you up to date. Once again, you're listening to The Crossroads with Life and Sports Intersect. I love you guys. It's the action word, and we're out. Peace.